With the fifth selection, Vancouver Select from the London Knights, Ole Ulevi.
Here's Hamhuis cutting in, weak shot, stop, rebound, they score! Hendrik Sedin with 2 minutes to go, and the Canucks have tied the game at four.
Horvat gets a step, headed for the net against Burns. Bo Horvat scores! What a spectacular goal by Bo Horvat.
With our first selection, we select from the WHL Calgary Hitmen, Jake Virtanen.
This is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Now, here's Chris, Clay, Matt, and Adam. These guys really need some nicknames.
Episode 96 of the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Matt Lee with you here. You can follow me on Twitter at MattLee980. Riding solo for the majority of this episode. Once again, same thing I did in episode 95 last week. We will link up, though, with Clayton Emo in a little bit. Chris Golden and Adam Ovenell-Carter sitting this one out. You can follow them at LightForest and at AdamFOC on Twitter, respectively. Well, how was that for an NHL draft? Every single person, it seemed, had Pierre-Luc Dubois pegged for the Canucks before the Columbus Blue Jackets shocked the world, at least in my mind, and took him at third overall. We will discuss the draft and what did or did not happen for the Canucks in a little bit. In the meantime, buyouts. I mean, speculation is that the Vancouver Canucks are preparing to keep Alex Burrows but buy out the contract of Chris Higgins. How do we all feel about that? We will get that from Clayton Emo as well. Also talking about tampering. Oh, Jim Benning, a little too candid about his love for one PK Subban. And free agency, of course, just around the corner, as is Canada Day. What are the actual odds that the Vancouver Canucks can land themselves a Steven Stamkos or a Milan Lucic or even a Louis Erickson? A lot to discuss, and it starts right now on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. All right, so let's rewind back to last Friday's NHL draft. Of course, a lot of optimism for the Vancouver Canucks, even though they had only six picks and only two of the first 140 overall. We remember back at the NHL draft lottery, you were there, I was there, Adam was there, so was Chris. You heard our live reaction to the Vancouver Canucks losing the draft lottery to both Winnipeg and the Columbus Blue Jackets. No one wanted to be in fifth at the time, but the more we thought about it, the more we thought to themselves, Pierre-Luc Dubois, it just made sense. I was convinced it was going to be Pierre-Luc Dubois. And I'll tell you, I had waffled back and forth between Dubois and Tkachuk in the days and weeks leading up to the NHL draft, despite the fact I had read a lot of material, seen a lot of mock drafts, where Pierre-Luc Dubois was the guy who was going to wear the Canucks sweater at fifth overall. That said, it wasn't until the night before of the draft that I had firmly decided it was Dubois that I wanted. I read an awesome blog post on Dubois, and you can check it out at leafshub.com if you want to. It's still very relevant, just a great, great piece on Dubois. It told the story of Dubois with his Cape Breton Screaming Eagles of the QMJHL. On the eve of one particular game, he was a last-minute scratch due to injury. So he texts the Eagles and says, you know, since I'm not playing, is it cool if I sign some autographs during the second intermission? This guy still wants to be involved even though he has no responsibility to do so. And he texts the Eagles and says, you know, can I sign some autographs? And of course the Eagles say yes. And he texts them during that first period before he was even supposed to go down and start signing autographs and ask if he could come down early to start signing. And then even when that intermission is running down, the clock's running out, he turns to his staffer and he goes, you better get more material for me to sign because I'm not leaving until everyone in line gets an autograph. I mean, Dubois for me at that point really, really sold me on his character. Like, that's the kind of stuff that you expect out of seasoned veterans. And it's probably why the Blue Jackets, to be honest, picked him where they did at third overall. The guy's built like a truck. He plays the game hard and fast. He says he models his game after Jamie Benn. And he's got these leadership and character qualities that you would absolutely love to build your team around. If the Canucks could build their team around Dubois and Horvat, I mean, you're playing with house money. The club's frothing at the mouth. Like, these are two very seasoned, mature beyond their years guys who you could possibly be looking at as being your one and two centers down the middle for the next 10 years. I had little doubt that he was their number one priority going into their draft. Like, let's be honest, as much as we all loved Austin Matthews, Patrick Laine, and Jesse Puljujarvi, those guys were pipe dreams for the Canucks at number five. So reasonably, Pierre-Luc Dubois had to be their number one priority. And of course, it isn't how things went. The Jackets took him third, and now we're left, you know, sort of wondering what could have been had the Jackets not taken him third and the Canucks got him at fifth overall. But I think that's where things start to begin to sort of unraveling for Canucks fans at the draft, because we got our hopes up so high on Pierre-Luc Dubois, myself included, as you can attest. But when the Jackets took him so early, through no fault of the Canucks' own, it still felt like disappointment at the draft. And of course, naturally, the conversation quickly turns into there's a chance, as slim as it was, that the Canucks could have had Jesse Puljujarvi fall to them. Well, no, because it was too easy for the Edmonton Oilers to scoop him up at number four, because of course, even though the Edmonton Oilers lose the draft lottery, they don't really lose drafts either. So they're not going to pass on Jesse Puljujarvi. They're not going to pass on Matthew, or they are going to pass on Matthew Tkachuk, because they're getting Puljujarvi, who fell into their laps. So crazy as it sounds, in other words, I think fans for Vancouver experienced two disappointments that were completely out of their control. Number one, not getting Pierre-Luc Dubois, and then number two, not getting Jesse Puljujarvi, as much as there was a chance that they probably wouldn't get Puljujarvi. So then it becomes essentially that discussion of who would you rather have, Matthew Tkachuk or Olli Levy? I think coming into the draft, this much seems clear. The Canucks knew for a long time what Matthew Tkachuk brought to the table. The guy's got decent size, he's got great nose for the net, and like they had been repeating so many times in the days and weeks leading up to the draft, so good from the circles down. The scoring touch is there. I mean, of course, when you score the Memorial Cup winning goal, though, that certainly improves your stock. And honestly, Tkachuk just has the name value. He is the son of an NHL legend. You're far more likely to sell hope with a flashy name and an impressive resume than you are with a more sort of inconspicuous name and a guy who plays an inconspicuous game like Olli Juolevi. But that said, this is what we know about Olli Juolevi. He is so intelligent. He thinks the game at a high level, and it's like he's the kind of guy who, if you were playing a chess match against, he's the guy thinking two or three steps ahead every time. And considering the lack of talent on the Canucks' blue line combined with the fact that teams these days are falling over themselves to get defensemen of a high caliber, see the case of Eric Gudbranson, Juolevi is a very smart choice. I mean, it seems hard to see right now, but I really like Juolevi for the Canucks in the long term. He's drawn the comparisons to Olli Maatta at the low end and as high as Oliver Ekman-Larsson at the high end. So I'll tell you, if the Canucks get somewhere in that range between Maatta and Ekman-Larsson, they've made a good decision. We don't know if Juolevi is going to be a number one defenseman, but it seems safe to say that management thinks that Juolevi can be a top pairing defenseman. So it is going to be a big year ahead for Juolevi. Assuming he ends up going back to the London Knights, he will expect to be a top pairing defenseman on the defending Memorial Cup champions roster. He is going to expect to get more power play time, play a ton of minutes in general. I'm sure he's going to go back to Finland to play for them at the World Junior Hockey Championships, where he won a gold medal. Rather, it'll be back in Canada, but he'll play for Finland. When he was named the tournament's best defenseman, all while he's going to get bigger and stronger to prepare himself physically for the NHL. That seems to be the knock, that he's got to add that upper body strength. And I think if you take all those things off the checklist, Juolevi does have a strong chance of what will likely be a bad Canucks roster, or at least cracking that roster heading into the 2017-18 season. And let's be honest here again. Juolevi is now the crown jewel. He's the crown Juolevi of the Canucks blue line pipeline. You're likely going to have Chris Tanev still on this roster within the next 3 years. You're hoping that you get a matured Ben Hutton physically and, you know, mentally, emotionally, whatever, plus Juolevi and some big body blue liners in Eric Gudbranson and Nikita Trampkin. I don't know if I call those five better than the Canucks blue line we saw in its 2011 heyday, but it's markedly improved, markedly younger. Not too expensive in the grand scheme of things, but that's a pretty good-looking blue line. All right. More on the NHL draft in 2 seconds here with Clayton Nemo. We're going to get him on the line back in a second with more on the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
If that's how we're going to battle, we're not going to have a chance to win.
You can do it!
So s*** not going right. F***ing get your heads out of your and make it work by outworking the opposition.
Oh, no! We suck again!
They think we're playing good, but they have no idea how we're going to come here. Forwards are getting to the offensive zone. Let's grind these down here, hey?
We just sucked.
I want to ask you a bunch of questions.
And I want to have them answered immediately.
C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Matt Lee in studio riding solo, but joining via phone is guest contributor Clayton Emo, who you can follow on Twitter at Canuck Clay. Clay, how are you doing, brother?
I'm great, Matt, but I just heard you say I'm relegated back down to guest contributor.
Happens when you guys, you know, take time off last week and made me do this podcast by myself. I don't care if it was Father's Day, Clay. You have a responsibility to the thousands and thousands of C4 listeners.
That's right. My goal for the summer, Matt, is to get my priorities certainly in straight and in check.
Yeah, and yet you're still tweeting about which Canuck draftees you can sort of make C4 songs for YouTube.
Hey, the people, not all the people, but the people are clamoring.
You already figured out a music video dedication for You Levy?
Not yet. Actually, I was going to take a little bit of a break or fast over the summer and, you know, whet people's appetites, and we'll come out strong for the start of the season as we usually do. So, but I'm open to suggestions from you, from Chris, from Adam, from anyone.
Like, I think there's a bevy of You Levy fans out there.
Well, that's a good start, and maybe it'll be heavy. Now, who knows?
We're hot and heavy for You Levy?
Oh, that's disgusting. Okay.
Well, Clay, I mean, on that note, I'm sure you saw some of the draft, or at least the highlights of it. I'm curious to get your take on Olli Juolevi. Of course, he got taken fifth overall by the Vancouver Canucks. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, bottom line, I was fine with the pick, Matt. I know, I'm sure we'll get into this, but once Dubois got picked at third, it was quite shocking by the Blue Jackets, sort of shocking at least. It kind of set off a chain reaction, and we knew Puljujärvi wasn't going to fall to us at fifth. So if we believe... This is the thing, Matt. If we believe that Benning indeed has always had his eye on Juolevi, right, as one of his top six, we presume it's the big three and then some combination of Dubois, Tkachuk, and Juolevi. I think it really came down to Juolevi or Tkachuk, and we shouldn't be surprised. He's been talking about taking defenseman for the last number of weeks and months even. So am I fine with the pick? Yeah, I really am. I think we have whether you call him a number one or at least a top pairing, a one or a two. And yes, defensemen take a few years to develop, but this is the stud, this is the guy, this is the offense defenseman we have not had. So I'm fine with it. I really am.
Would you have taken Juolevi over Tkachuk?
Yeah, would I have? I think, oh gosh, admittedly, I haven't seen a lot of you. I knew more about Tkachuk just because, for whatever reason, I think a lot of the hype was on him.
Let's be honest, he's the flashier of the two.
He is, yeah. He's got probably more name recognition, you know, being North American, being second generation, all that kind of stuff. And I think you'd agree, Matt, his stock certainly rose over the past couple months. We started to hear more, right? People were talking about him or Dubois, right, at four, let alone five or six. So I think that's tough to say. If I was there sitting at the table having 3 minutes to make my call, I truly think I could have gone either way, and I would be sitting here saying I'd be happy with a Tkachuk pick, but I'm truly fine with the Juolevi pick. How about you, my friend?
Oh, man. I mean, in the heat of the moment, at the time, I think they should have just taken Tkachuk, but I get taking Juolevi, especially because you see so many NHL general managers these days sort of falling all over themselves just to get a top-pairing defenseman like Juolevi. I mean, we saw the cost it took to get Erik Gudbranson in the first place. So from that regard, it does make a lot of sense. And that, you know, sort of being said, is the Canucks pipeline in general is just pretty thin on the blue line. I mean, you got Jordan Subban there. There's some hope with Andre Pedan and Nikita Tramkin, but there isn't a whole lot else.
Yeah, no, I agree. So, for the sake of completeness, paint the Tkachuk picture for me. Like, why would you have been happy with Tkachuk at five?
I think you're just getting a guy whose style of play is tailor made for the Western Conference. I mean, we've all read the scouting reports on Tkachuk. We saw the limited highlights of him at the Memorial Cup. He's just so good from the face-off circles down. His style of play in front of the net, he's a deflection artist, it seems like. So he can score so many of those dirty goals that you see scored in the Western Conference. I thought for me that this is a guy who makes his line mates actually better, unlike, and that's a rare thing among wingers, first of all. So you're usually relying on centers to make his players better around him. But this was one of those rare circumstances in my mind where Tkachuk is the kind of guy who makes his line mates better as a winger. So that's why I thought it was there. But, you know, I get it. Like, you don't want to be the team like the Edmonton Oilers where you're taking wingers in back-to-back-to-back NHL drafts. I mean, we've seen Jake Virtanen and Brock Besser join the Canuck ranks, and it would have been a little weird or maybe not as conducive to the roster in the long term if they had taken another winger.
Yeah, I think you could argue that Virtanen, it's not a perfect comparison, but does a lot of the things that Tkachuk does, right? And or they hope that,
but on a lower end, I think.
Yeah, fair enough. And they're, you know, you can argue they're both pick number six you know, 2 years apart. But I think, do you agree that I guess the one knock against Kachuk, Matt, was his skating ability or lack thereof?
Yeah, that was obviously one of the big knocks on him, and especially in the Memorial Cup, he seemed to be hobbled by a bad foot or ankle injury, which sort of limited his skating ability there. That might have turned some scouts for the Canucks off as well. But, I mean, you could make the argument that Bo Horvat's first step wasn't that good when the Canucks drafted him either, and we've seen how good he's improved his strength in his lower body now.
No, that's a good point. And, I did a quick video blog on Olli Juolevi and some of his positives, and I think it can't be understated. Yes, he played on two good teams, but he's been a winner this past year, right? They won the Memorial Cup. They won the World Championship, and whether you argue that he was the top-pairing defenseman on there, and he obviously had good players surrounding him, but he has already learned how to win at a young age, and that can only be a bonus and a benefit.
Yeah. You and I are simply just bystanders of this draft, so we only saw from the surface. But do you think there was even a possibility, once they saw Dubois go off the board, that the Canucks could have tried to explore a last-minute deal to move down and get Juolevi and possibly pick up an asset along the way?
That is a great question, and I think, admittedly, the feedback to the video blog and to everyone around it, that's, I think, the biggest criticism. Once people are settled with that Juolevi pick and they accept it, yes, the question is, could Benning have moved down? And I look at it two ways, Matt. You wonder if prior to Friday night, if Benning had gone through all those scenarios and if he explored, you know, all the teams 6 through 10, right, trying to work out a potential deal with them, anticipating something like this. I guess the other thing is that, yeah, as soon as Dubois went at 3, then you really only have 5 or 10 minutes to scramble like heck, right? Let's say you weren't anticipating that, and now is your phone ringing? Are you making calls while you're trying to figure out what Edmonton's going to do? I can only imagine what it's like at that draft table, and I'm not sure that they had the time nor the proper alternatives ready to go. You'd like to think they'd explored it prior,
yeah.
But I think in the bottom line, Matt, they were fine with that pick, and I don't know how hard it's hard to say. Do they think other teams would have scooped him? Do they think that if Puljujärvi went 3, would Edmonton have scooped Juolevi or Sergachev or Chychrun or another defenseman as they needed them? So it's so hard to say. I think it's easier said than done, is, I guess, my bottom line is could they have traded down? Yeah, but we don't know what it's like working those phones or how hard or not hard Benning was trying. What do you think?
We'll get into that in a second, but I want to bring it back just a little bit, because now we definitively know what Jim Benning's list looked like. He said in the days leading up to the draft, he had 6 players he liked in that 5 position. We know Austin Matthews was number 1 on that list, obviously. Patrick Laine seemed to be number 2. I guess at this point we know that Matthew Tkachuk was 6, and Juolevi had to have been 5, with Dubois probably being 3.
Right.
I mean, 3 being Dubois or 3 being Puljujärvi. 3 or 4, we don't know the exchange there. So, to recap, it was either Austin Matthews 1, Laine 2, 5 was Juolevi, 6 was Tkachuk. And it's a toss-up between who he liked better, Dubois or Puljujärvi. But considering Benning, he probably liked Puljujärvi at 3 and then Dubois at 4.
Fair enough.
So, in that aspect then, once Dubois went off the board at 3... I think Puljujärvi became his number 1 priority, and then it was going to be Juolevi and then Tkachuk in that order. Now, what we don't know is if he had those discussions with the teams in that sort of 6, 7, 8, 9 range. I think that's the range he would have been willing to trade down into. We don't know if those teams that were looking to move up would or would not have taken Olli Juolevi at that spot.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So if the Canucks had explored the possibility of trading down, I think they were very paranoid that they were not only going to strike out on Juolevi, but they were also going to strike out on Tkachuk. So they weren't willing to take the risk of trading down if it meant losing Juolevi.
I agree. And especially if they had Juolevi way ahead of the other potential defenseman, then I think you're right on, Matt. Like, it would be different if they were fine with Sergachev or Chychrun right after, like, they're fine at a 7, 8, 9, 10 type thing, right? And then they could explore potentially using Juolevi, but yes, getting an asset and moving down to 7, 8, 9, or 10.
Yeah.
But you're right. If Juolevi was by far and away their number 1 pick for D-men, I agree with you. They couldn't risk losing out on a chance to get him.
And this is purely conjecture on my part, but I really think it was Juolevi as their number 1 defenseman, and then it wasn't close compared to Sergachev and Jacob Chychrun as well.
Yeah, especially you see the way that Chychrun, didn't he fall away to 14?
He fell to the Coyotes, who traded up to, I think it was 13 or 14 to get him.
Right. And we know that the big Russian, Sergachev, went ninth to Montreal. So, you know, within striking distance of five, but that's still a four-pick difference there. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the Canucks can safely say they picked the best defenseman available in the draft, but you're still leaving a lot of fans with that what-if question of what if Dubois fell, what if they, you know, sort of traded down, all those kind of scenarios. So,
I was just going to say, you see the footage from the draft party too, right? I think a lot of, at least the two views I saw, a lot of people, I think, were clamoring for Tkachuk at five. Mm-hmm. Funny.
Let's be honest, Tkachuk was the name brand there that you could have sold hope with. But, I mean, yeah. I digress. We've talked about Ualevi's strengths more than enough, and I think he will be a fixture on this team for years to come. I know you don't know too much about everyone else the Canucks sort of drafted, Clay, so let me just run down the list here. Third round, 64th overall, they took Will Lockwood, a right winger from the USA under-18 team. He's committed to Michigan next year. Fifth round, Cole Candela from Hamilton in the OHL. Sixth round, Jacob Stuckel from the Calgary Hitmen. He's a winger. Seventh round, Rodrigo Abels from Portland. Also in their last seventh round pick, Brett McKenzie from North Bay Battalion. Quickly surmising all of those players in a nutshell, I think with Lockwood and Candela, those were educated picks from Benning. I've heard a lot of comparisons to Yannick Hansen for Will Lockwood in the sense that he's not great at like scoring, he's not great at forechecking, but he's pretty good at everything. He's
right, and very energetic. That's the one thing I've heard about him is he's got a lot of energy.
Yeah, like Hansen, a Swiss Army knife is how they sort of call him. So you could do wrong if you get a guy who's going to become the next Yannick Hansen. You know, the Canucks passed on some good talent at that spot. Vitaly Abramov as a very talented small winger. That's who they passed on. Of course, you could get into Ty Ronning, Sean Day, those kind of players. And then in the fifth round, Cole Candela seems to be this intelligent defenseman who does have that possibility to be more, and he might have been a higher round pick if he had not missed so many games due to injuries. You know, looking at these players as a whole, the totality of those players outside Ualevi, it seems to be that the ceiling for these players is a lot more limited than if the Canucks were to take chances on Abramov or Sean Day, who have more potential. So, I mean, I'm curious, Clay, this was a year in my mind where we really seemed to get insight into Jim Benning's drafting strategy. We may not agree with it, but it seems like in those later rounds, Benning would rather draft the low-end guys with less potential but do have a better chance of carving out an NHL career. I mean, if this is the Mike Gillis regime, yeah, you could see them taking Abramov in the third round because not unlike a Hunter Shinkarak, he's that smallish winger with scoring touch and he had the numbers to prove it. But Benning, he seems to be keen on going with guys who become bottom six forwards or bottom pairing defensemen but could definitely forge their own careers. So what do you think?
Yeah, like you said, I wasn't too up on the knowledge of my prospects, admittedly, and I thank you for that recap. But I haven't heard a lot of people complain about what he did on day two of the draft. And I think it has a lot to do with what you're saying, Matt, is they seem to be safe picks. They seem to be the type, you know, these will be players that will push, maybe not make roster spots automatically, but will push for that, you know, bottom five, six on D or the bottom six on forwards and at least give the organization some depth, right? And it's through depth. Yes, you have to build your team through the draft, but the depth and the prospects will obviously give you some bargaining chips or some assets for these, you know, these things down the road where we hear of Benning sometimes trading a fifth pick or a sixth pick or seventh pick or a prospect. So who knows? It could be part of some master plan. And I think Benning, you look at the last few years where he's taken not necessarily high risk, but more the names like the Virtanens and the Bessers and even the Trampkin, who was a third round pick, and the Demkos. And he's done a good job from the third round and up. So, I think you're right. It's about building this base, this foundation, and basically stockpiling for the bottom parts of the draft. And who knows how these guys will turn out, or whether or not they just simply are there for depth purposes and to push other players up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to question Jim Benning's drafting ability because that seemed to be the one thing he could do right for a year that we saw so many things go wrong. I mean, in the past, too, I mean, we saw guys like, you know, Guillaume Brisebois. He got drafted 66th in the 2015 mm-hmm. entry draft. He seems to be developing enough that, you know, he's just gotten an invite to Canada's World Junior Development Team program. You know, Dmitry Zhukunov, he was drafted late. You know, Adam Gaudet. These are all players that were drafted late, but they seem to be developing slowly but surely. We don't know what kind of high-end potential they could be, but it certainly looks that they're actually good bets to make NHL careers out of themselves, rather than if you took these boomer bust guys like a Hunter Shinkarak, who Jim Benning clearly thought doesn't have an NHL future.
Right. And it's interesting, of these five guys that you outlined, Matt, I guess the one of them, the middle guy, is from Surrey, right? So I've seen a lot of you know, a lot of tweets and love back and forth between him and the Vancouver Canucks Twitter account. So they're at least a homegrown boy there that we can get excited about and at least track his progress to see if he makes the big club. Yeah.
I mean, that said, there I did have a couple holes to poke in in Jim Benning's draft. I mean, like, let's be honest. Seventh round, you're likely not getting a guy with an NHL future. At what point did you want to see the Canucks just take a flyer and Ty Ronning?
Where did Ronning end up going at?
He ended up going 201st overall to the New York Rangers. So after the Canucks made their 2 seventh-round picks.
Okay, yeah. So
they had two chances, is what I'm saying,
right,
to draft Ronning and passed both times. And let's be honest, I like Rodrigo Abels, but he's an overager 20-year-old who was playing for their development camp last year, and then I've never heard of Brett McKenzie. Like, here's perspective on Rodrigo Abels. Hockey Prospect Radio, they have a book that they have that comes out every draft, and I can only call this thing like it's a 500-page anthology on all prospects, and I mean like hundreds of prospects, including overagers. Abels, a 20-year-old, he was not in this book at all.
I heard he was number 501, though.
like if the guy's not in that book, just take Ty Ronning.
No, I hear what you're saying. It's a feel-good story. You can't. Yeah, there's at that point, there's very low risk considering all 29 other teams, passed on him for 6 rounds, right? So I'm with you. There would be no risk in doing so, and it makes for a feel-good story, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, if you had drafted Ronnie, you could watch him in your own backyard. He's going to be playing out of the Langley Event Center. I mean, why not? There's no harm in it. So, anyway. Moving on, if you could give the draft a report card, what would you sort of give the Canucks? I know you speculated this on Twitter.
Yeah, I threw it out there. For me, I would give it, a solid B or B+. I'm very happy with the Ulevi pick. I don't like the fact that we didn't have a second rounder, or compared to other teams who had 9, 10, 11 picks in the first 3 or 4 rounds. So I didn't like that aspect. But for the guys themselves, I'm very comfortable with the Ulevi pick. And admittedly, I didn't know much about the bottom five. I mean, the other five guys, so I'm going to take your word on it. So I would give it a B or B+. I certainly wasn't disappointed.
Yeah, I mean, I told you a B-. I'm sort of sticking by it. I think it's okay, but in those late-round picks, I feel like the Canucks are just, they did themselves a bit of a disservice by not trying more home run picks in that 6th, 7th round range.
Yeah.
Like, I like Lockwood. I like Ulevi, obviously. I think Candela is a decent pick at the round they got him in, which was 5. But, in the 6th and 7th range, those are your times where you're taking the home run picks. And I think that has to change a little bit for them. But that's my drafting strategy more than anything.
Fair enough. What do you gauge the feel of the city and CHB.
I mean, it seems to be a lot of sour grapes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. I digress. We got to move this along quickly here, Clay. Twitter speculating this afternoon, this is Sunday afternoon, that the Canucks this week will render their verdict on the contracts of both Alex Burrows and Chris Higgins. Word is the Canucks will hang on to Burrows and they will buy out Higgins. If they do buy out Higgins, it is an $833,000 cap hit over the next 2 years, but they do save $1.6 million this season in space if they do it. Your thoughts on that decision, if it in fact does come down that way?
Yeah, the Higgins one I'm fine with. I think we saw the writing on the wall when he was, sent to Utica so early last year, right, after a tough start. So that does not surprise me, and I think that makes sense. The Burrows one's interesting. I know we speculated it at the end of last year.
I thought they would hold on to them.
And that was before, all this free agent talk. And the way I forecast the lineup, I see two holes, like two forward spots, depending on how much Rodin's going to do. I believe that there's still two spots, and I wasn't counting on Burrows immediately taking up one of those two spots. I thought the Canucks were going to get into this, try and land two wingers in free agency, not just one. But so the Burrows one's a little surprising to me, but not overly, considering I predicted at the end of April that they would indeed hold on to him from a leadership perspective.
Is it a good move to hold on to Alex Burrows then?
I really think it. I don't know. When do they have to declare by?
I think they've got a little bit of time left, but I think this week before free agency seems most prudent to make that decision.
Right. I get the sense that I'm really on the fence in this one. I think if they can get two forwards in free agency, that would both admittedly be an upgrade over Burrows. I think you could look at buying him out, but if they're counting, putting their eggs and maybe just going after one big one and they need him to fill out, a bottom six spot, then I can see that reasoning too.
Mm-hmm. Tampering. You're going to get tampering charges. We're all getting tampering charges. The NHL is footing us the bill pretty soon here. Yeah, Jim Benning coming under hot water earlier this week for talking on 1040, saying he was interested in PK Subban, despite the fact Subban is on a contract for the rest of eternity. What do you think is coming down? We should know more by the time this podcast comes out, but what was your speculation?
Exactly. We expect a verdict Monday morning. I think he'll definitely get fined. I don't see a more drastic penalty of draft picks. I think that's the next stage, right, is you could actually lose future draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would just be another way to lose them instead of trading them away. But I believe, we hear about Ron Wilson's $25,000 fine a few years ago when he talked speculatively about going after the Sedins, the free agency. So I see a similar thing. Benning's kind of like, we joked around, like he's too honest. He'd be a
He's so honest. He's brutally honest sometimes. Forthcoming.
He's like Yeah, you'd love to have him around, a dinner table at a family dinner and pick his brain. And he just seems like a generally nice guy. But, man, 29 other GMs know not to do that,
just
right?
Just keep your mouth shut, Jim.
I know. So I think it was more his honesty that's the problem, not any malicious intent. And I know Lyndon said so, but Lyndon also said that he agrees that Benning somewhat crossed the line. I'm expecting a fine somewhere between 25. I don't know how high they can go, between 25 and whatever, 35.
Do you think from now on, though, Jim Benning becomes more tight-lipped? Like, we're just not going to hear any more honesty from Jim Benning now as a result, because it could be a $25,000 lesson he had to learn?
And I hope he doesn't do it. I don't think he has the character to do it sarcastically, but I even saw on Friday, as Elliot Friedman asked him a question at the draft day, yesterday you talked about going after Subban and Stamkos, any more comment on that?
Mm-hmm.
And then Benning just flatly said, I'm not allowed to talk.
And you know what? Even after, when people were asking him, if Dubois had fallen, would you have taken Dubois? He was like, I can't speculate on other team's players. I'm like, well, that's no fun, Jim.
I know, and that was the guy who was taken, 3 hours ago. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I think he's learned his lesson, albeit an expensive lesson. And, I just think when you compare him, I'm not saying he's the dumbest out of 30 GMs, but 29 other guys knew what to do and what not to do.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, I know I say this all the time, but we're up against the clock. Unrestricted free agency opens July 1st, Canada Day. I'm working that day, but Steven Stamkos, let's be honest, is there any chance? How do you ballpark them, their odds, in terms of percentage?
I would say less than 10% for Stamkos.
Me there's a chance.
A very small chance, but would he want to come here? I think it's one thing to say, we have the money, and we have the wherewithal to go after him, but he gets the choice of where he goes to go to, right? So
I cannot imagine him, after being in the Stanley Cup in 2015 and making it to the Final Four this year, that he has any desire to want to come to a team that is rebuilding like the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah, not where you hear about teams like Detroit, or that at least were playoff teams. And then, would you pick Toronto with Austin Matthews or Vancouver?
Yeah, I mean, are you asking seriously, or are you just being sort of passive?
No, I'm actually being serious because of...
I don't know. I mean, at what point, there's Austin Matthews, they've got a lot of good building blocks in Toronto, but at the same time, where do you fit a Steven Stamkos when you're building your team around Austin Matthews?
No, fair enough. Fair enough.
That's why I think Detroit sort of has the leg up there.
Yep.
I tend to agree. Maybe 10% chance that Stamkos actually comes here. But,
sure.
I mean, I don't think any of us thought that Zach Parise and Ryan Suter were going to go to Minnesota either.
That's true. And look where that got them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. though, I mean, can we safely say Milan Lucic, 100% deal to Vancouver?
Well, I wouldn't say 100, but I'd certainly say it's more than 10. It's funny. You hear about hometown, is that a good or bad thing? We know he's gone from LA. We know Edmonton's sort of interested. Does that change now that they picked up a winger? And who knows? Lucic, I would ballpark it. Benning loves him. He's a Benning guy, big, sturdy. I don't know. I would put that at 50-50. You?
No way. It's got to be higher than that, I think.
Really?
I fear, and I don't feel good about it. I think it's a 75% chance Milan Lucic will be a Canuck on July 1st.
And is it because you think we want him so badly, or do you think he actually wants to come here?
I think it's both. I think the interest is going to be mutual.
Okay.
Let's be honest. You call a spade a spade. I mean, the guy grew up in Vancouver.
Yep.
He was a Vancouver Giant. He despite his incident at the poutine restaurant in down Vancouver, I mean, the guy oozes Vancouver blood in him. So I feel like if there's interest from the Canucks, there is certainly interest from Milan Lucic. Would you do 5 or 6 years for him?
Oh, gosh.
You know he's going to get one of the two.
Yeah, if I had a choice, obviously I'd go 5 years. At the risk of, you know, if money's not the issue, then why, you know, any less years better, right, than more.
Would you rather give him more money and less term, or less money and more term?
Gosh, if I say more money and less term, it hamstrings us for the last couple of years of that, that contract term. I don't know if buyouts are still going to be around 5 or 6 years from now. I would still go with less term.
You said that very unsurely.
No, I say that because I'm running through Dorsett and Spezza in my head right as we're talking, and I can't remember if we're more hamstrung by the money or the term, or a combination of both, obviously, in a contract.
Right. So if I were to throw out these two scenarios for you, would you rather give him $30 million over 5 years, or 36 over six? No, wait, that doesn't make sense. $30 million.
No, I know what you're getting at.
Would you rather give him 30, let's say 35 over 5? No, that's not realistic. Let's say
36 over 6.
Yeah, would you give him 35 over 5 or 30 over 6?
Right. That's a better comparison. Oh, I would need to look at all the numbers for all the players under contract, but in all things being equal, I obviously want a shorter term. And if the money is negligible or relatively negligible, I would go with the shorter term, especially for a 20-year-old who plays the way he plays, and some would argue maybe his best days are even behind him.
Mm-hmm. Lucic or Eriksson, who would you rather have?
Between those two, Eriksson's older, right? He's 31?
Yeah, he's older.
Oh, he's 30?
Yeah, he's 30, and Lucic is 28.
But he won't demand the sort of money that Lucic will, at least not as much.
We don't know that.
Yeah, you know, to me, toss-up, maybe Eriksson with a slight edge over Lucic, just because I think Eriksson would more seamlessly play with the Sedins than Lucic would, but no, who knows?
I asked Adam this question last week. Would you rather have those two guys or Andrew Ladd and Troy Brouwer?
And what do you say?
I'm asking you, though.
Oh, Ladd and Brouwer. Yeah, I don't see a lot.
Assume the money is similar for all four players.
Right. If the money is similar and term, let's say it's just looking at the players, I would still take Eriksson, Lucic. I think there's a higher skill there.
Interesting.
Yeah, Ladd and Brouwer, they certainly bring, you know, they bring a lot of grit and a lot of leadership and reliability. But I think the potential, although they're a lot younger, right? No, they're the same, 30.
They're all 30, except Lucic is 28.
Yeah, no, I would go with Eriksson and Lucic then.
Okay, interesting. Dan Hamhuis told to expect free agency. Are we sad about this, or was this to be expected?
Certainly writing was on the wall when they didn't move him nor do anything, and I think his best days are behind him as well. And you know, the pay cut that he'll be asked to take, if at all, to stay here, if they're even going to go after him, I don't know if the PA will even let him do it. It'll have to be such a big cut, and the fact that we haven't heard anything, I don't see it happening.
In the words of Chris, peace be with you, Dan Hamhuis.
Peace be with you, exactly.
Last thing before I let you go here, Clay. Yeah. Ring of Honor, the Vancouver Canucks announcing Matthias Olin is the newest induction into the Ring of Honor. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think that was a no-brainer. I think a lot of people predicted that. I think we even predicted that on one of our
I said it.
Podcasts.
I'm awesome.
Was it you?
Yep.
Okay, congrats. Once
I also thought Tom Larshide might have been a consideration, though.
Okay, fair enough. Well, Larshide certainly would have been smiling more than Olin was in pictures. I don't know if you saw any of those things.
Yeah.
I didn't see a smile. Maybe a jet lag or something. I don't know. But, no, obviously the best, one of the best, if not the best, the Canucks defenseman, that's until Ylevi, of course, in 15 years. But
oh, boy. We said that about Alex Edler, too, by the way.
Fair enough. No, very deserving. It's a shame that he had his eye injury. He tried hard to come back from it, but obviously never the same player. But when he was at his best, he was certainly solid, almost a Hedman light, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But he was great, and I think well-deserved for sure.
Very quick Matthias Olin story I will share to you from my youth. You remember when we had the Canucks carnivals back in the day when the team sucked?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, right? They used to have them at then-GM Place, and the players could do meet-and-greets with the fans and stuff. So I was like 7 years old at the time, and it was just when Olin suffered that eye injury. Mm. And I remember asking him as a kid, you know, how's the eye? And he sort of seemed taken aback that a seven-year-old kid would be asking him such a serious question. And he just laughed it off. And he said, like, oh, it's getting better. It's getting better. And I got my autograph and he moved along. But he definitely seemed shocked that some presumptive kid with no, like, broadcasting experience whatsoever would ask him such a question.
So you're a smart aleck back then as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, definitely. Clay, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Matt. All right. Look forward to some more. I'm working myself up to co-host once again.
Yeah,
one
we'll
day.
See. You can prove your worth at free agency day, all right?
One can only dream.
All right, more C4 Podcast. We'll wrap things up here on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. All right, Matt Lee with you here on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com as we put a wrap on episode 96 of the C4 Podcast. Oh, boy. I don't know, man. It was an interesting draft. Let's put it that way. You know, I had been looking forward to this day for months, of course, like anybody else. But, boy, that was definitely a tough one for the Vancouver Canucks, depending on how you look at it. Again, going back to the conversation with Clayton Emo, I mean, this really provided a lot of insight into how Jim Benning drafts. He clearly likes to take guys who have low ceiling but low floors at the same time. Like, we've seen him trade Hunter Shinkaruk for a low-ceiling, low-floor guy in Marcus Granlund, but he seems pretty eager to trade the high-ceiling, high-potential, high-floor, high-ceiling, what is it? High-ceiling, low-floor guys in Hunter Shinkaruk. Like, he doesn't want to take boom or bust guys. He wants guys who he knows can be NHLers. But, you know, I digress. That's his strategy. It's not mine. I can respect that. We're not going to really question his drafting now. I mean, you can question the trading all you want, but I want to know, are the Vancouver Canucks going to sign themselves a free agent or two? We're learning right now at this point in time of the podcast that, of course, the free agent window is officially open, which means the Canucks can start talking to agents of UFAs to be. We have learned through News 1130 Sports that the Vancouver Canucks have inquired to the agents of Darren Helm, Louis Erickson, Andrew Ladd, those kind of players. Darren Helm seems to be a name that jumps off the page to you because that's really the first we've ever heard of it. Worth mentioning that Darren Helm is a former Medicine Hat Tiger who has played under Willie Desjardins before. So you can draw the connection right there. He seems to love his Medicine Hat Tigers. I wouldn't mind Darren Helm at a bottom six role, but I'm very loath to see how that's exactly going to work when you already have guys like Derek Dorsett under contract for the foreseeable future at some pretty big term as well. So I'm not sure how that one is going to work. I'd love to know how much money they're going to get Darren Helm for if they inquire. I'm sure the Canucks are just doing their due diligence anyway, and so we're going to have to wait and see what they do on July 1st. Come on, let's put the money where the mouth is. We know that the Canucks are going to get Milan Lucic. I'm not personally crazy about the idea. I've talked to Adam about this several times that I would throw a max of 4 years, $16 million, which is way too low. We all know Lucic is not going to go for that. He's going to easily go for 5 to 6 years, somewhere in the neighborhood of, let's say, $25 to $30 million. Maybe even $35, $36. But it's going to be a steep price to pay. So you better get ready to get your Lucic name bars on the back of your 17 jerseys, because I think that's what's going to happen in the next little bit. I'd rather have Louis Erickson. But, I mean, it seems to be a very divisive issue among Vancouver Canucks fans. Who would they want? One, both, or neither of those two former Boston Bruins? I don't know. I'd rather have Andrew Ladd and Troy Brouwer, personally. You know, you could do wrong than having a couple of good BC boys here on the Vancouver Canucks roster that have won a Stanley Cup before. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for us here on the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. You can, again, follow me on Twitter at MattLee980. You can follow my colleagues, Clayton Emo, at Canuck Clay, who you heard in the last segment. You can also follow Chris Golden at Lightforce and Adam Ovino Carter at AdamFOC. I'm sure we will have another podcast in the days leading up after the free agency window opens on July 1st. Canucks are really going to pony up, huh? They've definitely made it a priority to add some goal scoring to their wings. So we're going to have to wait and see what happens. A reminder, you can follow us on Facebook at C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. You can follow us at Canucks Hockey Blog on Facebook as well. Check us out on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. You can find us on iTunes as well. Make sure you follow Canucks Hockey on Twitter. With all that said, I'm out.
Thanks for listening to the C4 podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I'm going back to my roots another day, another dough, another high, another low. Rock bottom, rock bottom, rock bottom. I'm going back to my roots.